Wake up, Coastal Carolina. Wake up. This is your CCTA Wake Up Call.
Produced by the Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association, a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization dedicated to the preservation of the U.S. Constitution, free enterprise, and individual liberty.
Good morning, Coastal Carolina, and welcome to CCTA Wake Up Call. This morning in the studios here at Fernwood, with me are Hal and Rainer James, and I'm your host, Rick Hopkins.
Hey, Rick.
Hey, Hal. Good to have you here this morning. Hal, you're the chairman of our watchdog committee, and you attend most of the Craven County Commissioners' meetings and some of the other boards and all throughout the county, school board meetings, things like that. And you report back on their activities. So I'd like to talk to you this morning about this past week's meeting at the Craven County Commissioners. I was reading your watchdog report on that. And, well, go ahead and tell us about the $584,823 that you claim is to be spent on socialistic programs.
Well, that money you're talking about, the $584,823, covered a number of various programs that the county has and runs through the county budget. But it's a grant that they were asking for. The $584,000 includes the grant that they're applying for, as well as what's required of the county is in matching funds. And they call it the Home and Community Care Block Grant. Well, you know, in the past, I've heard a lot about the Community Development Block Grants and some of the things we objected to about the way they're handled. But this one was sort of new to me, and I did a little research on it, and I found out that this is assistance to family to elder Americans. That the whole program is assistance to elder Americans, and it's things that the churches, family, I mean, starting, and then neighbors, and then churches, and other volunteer organizations used to do. And Raina, for instance, cared for her mother a lot in her later years. Even learned to do dialysis and things like that. It was all handled in the family.
And that's the way it ought to be.
Right. And now the government seems to be replacing all of those things, your family, your neighbors, your church, and everything, in caring for elderly people. And I think that's misplaced. It's doing away with the individuality and our freedoms. Usually when you take a benefit from the government, you give up a little freedom to get it.
May I inject something?
Sure.
To me, it's topsy-turvy because from a religious point of view, people are required to look after each other. And it is not a requirement of the government. The government needs to create an environment in which we can live our lives and then get out of the way.
Right.
And actually, if you go back and look at the Constitution, none of this stuff is in there anywhere.
Mm-mm.
It is not the government's responsibility.
Not their brief.
It's not within the powers allotted to the federal government.
Right.
It's all government overreach.
Well,
one of the problems I have with it, Hal,
what's that, Rick?
Is there's so many of these programs out there now.
Oh, Lord,
That some of these families that are getting these benefits from multiple programs are now better off than people that are working full-time jobs. Some of them, both mother and father, are working.
Right.
And they're having to pay for daycare and, you know, other expenses.
And, Rick, it is not doing them any favors.
It's not.
Because what happens when a person is dependent is they are completely devoid of the joy of setting goals and achieving them. And that's one of the best parts of life.
Right.
So they're robbed of that by a government that's using them to buy votes.
Right.
It is horrible.
Well, you both know, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners do, that I've spent a lot of time recently concerned about openness in government and making sure that our commissioners and people in the county government particularly are open about what's being done with our taxpayer money. And in this particular case, I want to know more about what this money is actually used for. Who gets it? Is it contracting out to subcontractors? Who ultimately benefits from this this money? Right,
mm-hmm.
Follow the money. And the presentation that was made, both by the staff member who made the presentation and also in the agenda with the attachments and things like that, told which agencies were getting the money and maybe the name of a program or something, but it didn't tell who the ultimate benefactor was, who actually got the money in the long run. And so I asked the question, is this a type of thing where you have government contracting for various services, where that rewards minority and women-owned businesses and favoritism for single moms and, and what the heck is all of that kind of thing doing to our country? Reverse discrimination, which we were talking about earlier. So here's the way the request was presented, and here's the questions I ask about it. Well, CARTS gets $57,657. Now, that's pretty clear. We kind of know what CARTS does.
Craven Area Rapid Transit System.
Right, yeah. So they transport people around for minimum small charges or no charge at all. And the county has to pick up 10% of the cost of that. They have to matching funds of 10%. Then there was one called Home Delivered Meals. Now, the $185,560 for home delivered meals, but it didn't say who's getting that, whether it's paid to the school cafeterias for preparing the meals and somebody to deliver them, or the all private caterers, and who are the caterers, if that's true. And they are some of these contracted businesses with the government. So no one really tells you what's actually happening with the money. Just home delivered meals, $185,560. Congregate is another category. That's all they said, congregate. And I guess that refers to congregate or group meals. And that was $37,717. Well, who did they pay that to and for what? The next recipient of the funds is Coastal Community Management. Well, that's a 501c3 organization, and they receive $73,111 of these taxpayer funds. And what will they do to earn it? And, why are they being paid that much? There was no explanation. Another one called Senior Companion, and there again, that's the name of a program, I guess. Or is it another organization or some other service that gets performed? They never did explain it. They get $27,088. What I'd like to know is, in each one of these instances, who is being paid to do what? And it never was explained.
And who are the beneficiaries of what they do and why? What are the criteria?
Exactly. And then there was one called Havelock Senior Services Congregate. Well, last year, that was stopped saying that the only qualification, as you're mentioning, Raina, was people had to be 65 or older. Well, I'm almost 78, and I don't think I need anybody other than our family to provide meals to me.
I hope not. And, thank you very much.
Right. So, according to that, I could have gone down there and been perfectly qualified to get a free meal on the taxpayer. Well, I brought out the point that I believe that that was...
By the way, what? If you ever do something, I hope you get indigestion.
I think it's been used for a social gathering with meals that people could get around and talk about what's going on in government and things like that or whatever. And I think that the elected officials from Havelock kind of use that as a way to have a good social gathering and have the taxpayers pick up the money for it to kind of makes them look good to their public down there. That's the way I feel about it. All right, then I get to the bottom line, Rick. The feds will send us $526,341 for socialist-type services for Craven County if the taxpayers ante up only $58,482. And, of course, all the commissioners except Scott Dacey. Commissioner Dacey voted. He's the only one that voted no. Everybody else voted yes except Tom Mark, who wasn't there. And I thought that was an interesting point because at the beginning of the meeting, I had already raised some of these questions. Steve Tyson, the chairman, mentioned that Mark had requested that be put aside and not considered last Monday night, but at a future time. And then the staff person was asked, well, will that cause some kind of a problem? And she said, well, it might. And then so Commissioner Sampson and others want to know exactly what people wouldn't get their pay for meals and things like that if it was delayed. And there was a little, I call it a little song and dance routine that was done. But it became pretty clear that the staff person wanted the thing to go through that night. And eventually it actually did. They decided not to put the decision off and go ahead and make the decision last Monday night. And they approved this program of spending that much money of taxpayer funds in what I call just socialistic type programs.
Well, let me be the devil's advocate here.
Okay.
The last I heard, the federal government was over $18 trillion in debt.
Well, I made that point to them, too. I'm glad you brought that up again because, you know, repeat this over all the counties in the whole United States, and after a while, that's going to be a pretty good-sized chunk of change. I don't know exactly how much. I don't even know how many counties
there are. I don't either. Matter of fact, I intended to try to Google that and find out how many counties there are in this country.
Well, I know Alaska doesn't have counties, so that's right. Screws it all up, and that's a big territory.
But I'm sure they still get federal funding.
Yeah, and there was
and Craven County, watching that, the thing that you're doing with this watchdog effort is a microcosm. You know it's a large multiplier. It's where that $18 trillion has come from, pure mm-hmm. and simple.
And there was another $93,000 that I brought up. And what that was all about was Dubrin was asking our county to approve a transaction in which they could take possession of a plot of land and turn it into a park or some other public service, a playground or something like that. And they would acquire this property because FEMA had paid the landowner for it because of repeated floods that they had and had to constantly repair the building, I guess, for flooding. And they wanted to get out from under that. So they bought it for $93,000. And then if they bought it for $93,000, what are they going to do with it? So they're going to make a gift to Newman of it. Well, I just think it's a socialist type of thing when our government pays people who have chosen to build in a floodplain. And then they get that flood, you know, as you might predict, time after time after time. And finally, the government says, we got a bad deal here. So they buy the property and stop the deal. But the thing of it is, why did they ever enter in a contract anyway that says to a private individual, we're going to pay? Now, I know Commissioner Mark and others will raise it when I bring this point up. Well, that person was paying FEMA a premium. But I'm sure the premium didn't cover the $93,000.
Right. Actually, Hal, if you make the analysis to a private company, when they have a lousy claim experience with one person time after time, they cancel the policy.
Absolutely.
FEMA doesn't do that. It shells out taxpayer money instead.
I know. That's the way the government
says it. Well, it's obvious that you need to keep an eye on what our commissioners are doing. But right now, we got to take a break and hear from our sponsors. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to CCTA Wake Up Call. I'm here in the studios with Hal and Rainer James, and we've been talking about the Craven County Commissioners and the budgeting process they go through and how they spend our money. And Hal, one thing that you left out in your talk a moment ago was Craven County Social Services. You've got down there that they got $183,690.
Was that itemized? No, there's no explanation except it went to the Social Services Department.
Because I'm pretty sure they already get a variety of federal grants.
Oh, don't you know it? Yeah.
And the North Carolina State Auditor has said that that is the area with the most waste, fraud, and abuse.
Across the whole state.
Across
the and they know that, but what is being done about it?
Nothing.
They continue to vote it through like they did here.
Right.
With no explanation of any of the details.
I just wonder why the county commissioners can't push back a little bit. What would happen if they didn't approve of that transaction? The only thing they had to do was tell the city, yeah, it's okay with us. What if they said it's not okay with us?
They might lose a vote or two.
Yeah.
And but they might gain a one or two, too.
So. They might. They'd sure look better than mine.
I tell you, that
would
work with me.
Yeah. Well, y'all have also visited with some of our legislators up in Raleigh and gotten some information on what's going on with legislative action.
I'm sure you know that they're on vacation until the 13th.
Right.
And it seems like a time to take stock. I had had a hard time figuring out what was still alive and what died at Crossover.
Explain what Crossover is.
It's a date after which anything that has not been approved by one house or the other dies. Unless it's in the budget or
as a finance consideration of some kind, which would cost the state money.
Yeah, there's some exceptions, but basically that's what it is. So we started looking on the legislative website, General Assembly website, and it was hard to figure out in some cases. So we put calls in for Michael Speciale and Norm Sanderson, and both of them called back, and we were able to figure out, I mean, well, they told us several of the bills that we are intensely interested in are still alive. For
that's
example,
the good news.
Yeah, that's the good news. That certificate of need requirement, there are two bills that are one of them would get rid of the requirement for a certificate of need at all for medical facilities. The other would get rid of it in some instances, including ophthalmology surgeries.
In the doctor's office.
In the doctor's office.
Right.
Jay Singleton wrote a great opinion piece last Sunday that was published in the Sun Journal on that topic. That is a very safe procedure to do. It lowers, I think his figure was 45%, the cost of the procedures, and it enables better health care at lower costs.
Right. What complicates it a lot, if you don't mind me sticking that
absolutely
in.
Absolutely not.
Is that he starts a procedure in his office, mm-hmm. perfectly safe, but then he has to ask the patient to go down to the hospital. He'll meet them there and finish the procedure because they have to use hospital staff and whatever. And he says, actually, his staff is more experienced with what needs to
because
be done
that's what they
than
do
they
all
are
day
down
long,
at the hospital.
Not other
right.
stuff, sure.
It just doesn't make
absolutely.
Any sense at all except protection for the hospitals.
Yeah. So that one of those would get rid of it entirely. I would love to see that happen. Senator Norman Sanderson says that he thinks there's a good shot that something will pass, but he doubts we'll get the whole enchilada. Even a partial would be a big improvement, incremental, because I think then the General Assembly could be shown in hindsight. The counter argument is it causes problems for small rural hospitals.
Right.
Well, other states that have gotten rid of it altogether,
and there's plenty of them,
have healthy small rural hospitals.
Right.
So it's a red herring. It's the hospitals trying to hang on to a profit corner, and that action is causing people to pay more for
like
health insurance.
Like we said earlier, follow the money.
Follow the money, exactly. So anyway, it's part of the a partial improvement, and then a track record to run on, with the notion that they're going to finish the job later. Would be better than nothing, but the best course of action would be to get rid of it, absolutely gone.
You know, while we got time, I'd like to mention that something that's been very near and dear to CCTA, I think, and that's Senate Bill 524. That's the founding principles graduation requirement.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And and we're really concerned that with Common Core and all the other things that are going on, that our principles that our country was founded on are being lost in the shuffle somehow, not being taught, and it's being taught some strange different way. But anyway, according to both of our legislators, that one is still alive. So there's hope that that might be required yet to get it done.
We need to get our legislative action committee on it, and I'm sure Kim will be on it. Like.
My biggest concern. And I support it 100%, you know that. But like with the House Bill 588, which is already passed, requiring that the high school students be taught the founding principles, it's not being enforced.
No.
So how?
And that's the reason why a backup bill is under consideration.
But how is it going to be enforced? What will be the difference between it and what you already have in place?
I'm not sure the answer to that, Rick. Because in the evolution of bills, they have various additions, and I haven't read the most recent edition of the things that we're following. It's part of my homework ongoing.
Right. Well, we have some good conservatives in office now. We have the majority in there. My problem is you go through the exercise of getting these bills in and getting them passed, and then they're not enforced. What have you really accomplished?
It's amazing, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. So I'd like to see enforcement.
I would too. Part of the awkwardness there is the Department of Public Instruction. The head of that is an elected position. So there is sometimes even a legal battle between that department and the General Assembly. It is not well-defined. It's not a comfortable situation.
That,
it's difficult to deal
that
with.
That position is not above the law. And
nope.
When a law is passed,
amen.
Enforcing that law, I don't care what department you're head of. The law applies to you just like it does to everybody else.
I'd like to have it, right. have it have some teeth and some penalties if it is not adhered to.
Right. Well, since we raised this subject in general, I think a lot of our listeners might be wondering where the Common Core itself stands. And, of course, I wish Kim Fink were here. She'd be a great one to address that. But we know this. We've been going to that Commission on State. What's the correct name of it, Ron?
Academic Standards Review Commission.
The Academic Standards Review Commission. They have a meeting one Monday a month, and we've mm-hmm. always gone to them. And I think until that commission finishes its work, there'll be nothing done by the legislature except to wait for whatever that commission right. brings in.
There are some positive signs there.
There are some positive signs
there's
in
there. There's some good work being done there.
Yes.
There absolutely is.
Well, let's pause real quick and take another break because we don't want to leave our sponsors out here. And we'll be right back with Wake Up Call. Welcome back to CCTA Wake Up Call here in the studios with Howard and Rainer James. And we were talking to Rainer, who is chairman of our Legislative Action Committee. Rainer, you said there were several other bills that were still alive. Could you name the rest of those?
Sure. The student assault on teacher becoming a felony. We mentioned penalties.
Right.
Fair property insurance, referring to homeowners insurance, reflecting premiums reflecting experience, claims experience.
Willa Kelly's done a lot of work on that, and she's been to our meetings.
And then finally, repeal of business license fees. That's a hamper to mom-and-pop businesses and, well, all businesses.
Right.
So those are things we're interested in that are still alive and kicking.
Well, I'd just like to inform our listeners that on cctaxpayers.com, you can find copies of the Legislative Action Committee reports that Rainer does, and Hal's Watchdog Committee reports are there. So we'll keep you up to date on the progress on these bills and things. And a number of things that we've talked about here, Jay Singleton has been a previous speaker at our mm-hmm. public meetings, mm-hmm. and Willow Kelly has mm-hmm. been one of our speakers.
Mm-hmm.
So each month, the third Tuesday of the month, we have a public forum that's open and free to the public to attend. This month, the third Tuesday of June is Keith Davis.
Every July.
I meant July, I'm sorry. I'm much behind, aren't I? We already had the 4th of July, didn't we? Keith Davis, he's a retired Army intelligence officer, and he's going to be talking to us about, is Sharia law compatible with the U.S. Constitution?
And I think I know the answer to that, but I look forward to hearing him.
And it's a big concern with a lot of people, Sharia law trying to creep into our country. You can look into some of the European countries and see the results.
Oh, Lord, yes.
You don't have to wonder or imagine, just like you were talking about with the certificate of need laws, you can look at all the states that have already done away with it and
yep.
see what the results are.
Absolutely.
And you can do the same thing with Sharia law here, but that'll be the third Tuesday. I don't have the date on the top of my head, but that'll be Keith Davis. And also, we're going to have a second speaker that night. Matt Lindauer is going to follow up with the Anti-Corruption Act, the American Anti-Corruption Act. And that's to get money out of politics and to stop lobbyists' bribery, to end secret money, and to empower the voters. And
hey, Rick, one other thing. If you want to see what all this socialist government programs can do, consider what's happening in Greece right now.
Absolutely. That's a perfect example. Well, guys, I appreciate everything you do with the Watchdog Reports and the Legislative Action. But we're out of time, and we're going to have to refer everybody to go to cctaxpayers.com for more information. And we'll see you again next week.